welcome to the Trinity Tims, or the Duo Tims. So we're still waiting on a special guest coming in from Tenerife. He might be joining us, he might not, but we waited long enough. So thanks for everyone that's joined us so far. Hopefully it's worth the wait, and hopefully you're not too disappointed that you've only got myself, Joe McHugh from Video Celts, and Eric from over in Ireland. Eric's been off the grid, he tells me, over the weekend, but funnily enough, not much has changed at Celtic since he's been away. If anything, things have got worse. So if there's any happy clappers out there, head back to one of your favoured websites, because you're not going to like the next hour of content, because there's nothing really to be happy clapping about. Nothing's happening at Celtic. Two mixed results over the Como Cup, the manager questioning the club's ambitions, etc., etc. But first of all, I'd like to just have a quick word for the sadly the late great John Fallon. Since I was so sad when it was announced last week that he died. But the amount of content, the amount of tributes on social media has been incredible. I suspect there's not a current Celtic player that had more contact with supporters. John Fallon, his phone book must have been phenomenal. He'd probably visited virtually every club in every county in Ireland. Ballymena was a favourite of his. He'd been over to Sligo a couple of years ago, caught up with some extended family, and he was just 100% comfortable in the company of Celtic supporters. He would be at youth matches, he'd go to any sort of game. He'd be more comfortable talking with the normal supporters that he sees regularly every week. Guys that he'd get tickets for, they'd get tickets for him, they'd look after him. Big shout out to two guys in particular, Charlie McGinley and Tommy Stevenson. They looked after him big time, they helped him out with travel, and they just enjoyed being in his company so much, as did so many others. So it's a sad day. It's almost the end of a line on the great Lanarkshire Celtic players. We've still got Kieran Tierney, he's from a new generation, but we've lost Tommy Gemmell, we've lost John Fallon, we've lost Billy McNeil, we've lost John Clark. So they were all great Celts. It's sad we're left with Willie Wallace, Bobby Lennox and Jim Craig. So hopefully all three of them are doing well and they'll be with us for a while yet. But John Fallon, he had a great time. He was at the Coronation Cup as a supporter. He was at the 7-1 game in 1965. He was in goals to beat Dunfermline, kicked off the Jock Stein era. And when he finished up playing for Celtic, he just reverted back to supporting Celtic and just got on with his normal life. So can't say too much for him. Just a great, great guy. He'll be missed by many. And Celtic's a sadder, quieter place without him. He was a former player that said what he was thinking. Others tend to be a bit more coy and reserved. But John Fallon was certainly the real deal. So I'll miss him, and so plenty of others. But life goes on. Celtic goes on. And yesterday we had a double whammy. First up, we found out that we'd been rejected by Go Ahead Eagles with three bids for a player. We started off at £1.5 million for a guy doing quite well in the Eredivisie for the club that won the Dutch Cup. So Michael Nicholson came back and they tried to knock them over with a bid of £1.75 million. Whether it's pounds or euros, it's kicked into touch. But that was £1.75 million plus add-ons. Wow. I'm sure that knocked them over in the Go Ahead Eagles director's room. And then they came up with £3 million. So over the course of a week or two, Celtic's valuation for Jacob Broom, I'm not sure how to pronounce that. Broom. Celtic doubled their valuation of him, and it's still miles short. So Celtic started off. Celtic get £17 million for Nicholas Coon, and they offered less than a tenth of that for his replacement. They've now went up to £3 million for that. And if he signs, we can instantly sell Yang and Telio to more than cover it. But as usual with Celtic, under the gallant leadership of Michael Nicholson, the man on strings, The man that can't make a decision without phoning his favourite chairman, nothing happens. So the players are off just now. They're back training on Wednesday. They've had an extensive pre-season in Ireland, Portugal and Italy. Got a few days at home and then they're back after Wednesday. So, Eric, what's your impressions as you return back to Celtic cyberspace after a couple of days offline and found out that nothing's really changed and possibly things have got worse?
Well, obviously, I I wrote an article this morning where I said I was very calm and serene after my weekend of digital detox and spending some time hiking and mountain climbing and so on and so forth. And then I decided to dip back into Celtic cyberspace today and I said, surely something is going to happen over the weekend. Surely something, there'll be some sort of movement. And literally, oh, look, James is here. I'll drop him in now just while we have him. Just 2 seconds.
And while you're doing that, can you please block out Frank, cheerleader? Engels, Ida and Trusty played a major role in Celtic's Champions League success. I know that's painful for you, Frank, but head back to CQN and discuss the brilliance of Quan, Home, Telio and the rest. Welcome, James.
Yep. Hey, James. You're no longer on Tenerife anyway, we see.
No, home again.
The sombrero came back with you. So, look, well, I just finished my point there, James, and you can dip in then with the, obviously, you're to host tonight, so we just kind of started ahead of you there because there was time was pushing on. But, yeah, I started reading the whole story on Jacob Bryan this morning and I saw the derisory offers that were made. My total calm and serene levels went into white hot rage. I'm at the point where it really is starting to get farcical now. And the fan base in general, I think, is starting to wake up. They're starting to realize that something is rotten in the walls of Celtic Park at the moment. There's something not right. Because whatever the board is doing, it's certainly not benefiting the football operation. And we are, at the end of the day, football supporters. We're here to support the footballing operation and the product that's on the field of play. This is why we plough our money into the club. This is why we buy jerseys. This is why we do all the things that we do to keep the club cash rich. What is happening now is we're being had. We're getting nothing in return for the investment that we as fans put into the club, and it's getting farcical. And fans are starting to wake up, and fans are starting to get more and more agitated and more angry at the lack or, you know, the inaction in the transfer window at the moment. This pissballing about, I mean, the offer made to go ahead Eagles was derisory for a guy who has 67 appearances in the Eredivisie and 11 goals last season. And as Joe pointed out, they were the Dutch Cup winners. Fair enough, Nicholas Kuhn had 69 appearances for us, but he made his pedigree was seen in Europe, and that's where we made the money on him. But to be asking for a player who plays in a league like the Eredivisie and has really lit up the Eredivisie last season, scoring 11 goals off the wing, and to come in with an offer of 1.5 million, that's just derisory. That's taking the piss. It really is taking the piss. Our board needs to wake up, and they need to realize that this isn't going to work. His valuation is 6.5 million. I would imagine, at a guess, his valuation might have been 4.5 to 5 million before they started pissballing about and insulting Go Ahead Eagles with 1.5 million, 1.75 million, and then 3 million. 3 million seems to be the cutoff at the moment. That seems that we're not willing to spend any more than 3 million. We're back to this bollocks of like 3 million, punt, hope for the best, and see what happens. And unfortunately, clubs out there are not falling for it anymore. They know we're cash rich. They know we have the money. They're not asking for, like you said, we could sell Yang and Tilio and we'd make up the transfer anyway, even if it did cost us 5 million. I mean, it's just crap, derisory crap. And I think everybody's beginning to see it for what it is. And everybody's going tired of it. This constant barrage of adverts and tweets and all the rest of it about merchandise and looking for money from the fans consistently and willing to give us nothing in return. At the end of the day, guys, Celtic is not a fucking bank. It's not a financial institution. It's a football club, first and foremost. And the people in our boardroom would do well to realize that we are a football club. We're not a financial institution. And they seem to think that we are that. They think we're a bank to lodge money in and to let it build and build and build and do absolutely nothing when it comes to the football club. And it's getting really wearing and really tiring for everybody. And it needs to change. Celtic, as a club, needs new direction and needs to change now. That's my take, Joe.
Right, James, I'm passing the hosting baton over your way. You can take control. Give us your thoughts on the shambles of the three bids and also the horrible news that we're back on the Man City trail. I thought we'd ditched that about 10 years ago, but it looks to me as if we're wanting to get friendly with Manchester City again. Maybe next season's manager will be more compliant with bringing in players on loan from Manchester City. Players that we've no chance of signing. These days, Man City will send somebody out on loan, and if you want to buy them, it'll be £20 million or forget it. But I'll pass over to you, James. Give us some wisdom.
Well, Gaines, there is a theory, all right? And it is just a theory. The pro board guys can take this however they want it. We were told that Mark Lowell was this ultimate professional and that he was sought after and highly rated, clubs across Europe, blah, blah, blah. Mark Lowell departed our club this time last year after a catastrophic summer transfer window. Mark Lowell has not gotten a job at any other club. This transfer window has felt a lot like the transfer window 2 summers ago. It's felt a lot like it. And I just wonder, with Mark Lowell being allegedly out of work at the moment, if we're still paying Mark Lowell a salary for something.
I suspect Mark Lowell his work was
in an undisclosed capacity, because this feels an awful lot like a Mark Lowell transfer window. And the like with Manchester City is another sign that we are still doing things in that fashion, and that we are back to doing things in that fashion. As you say, Joe, we left the Manchester City link behind a while ago, I thought. And to see us being linked with a 19-year-old Man City player on loan is pretty shocking, to be honest. It's pretty disturbing. I mean, we have a guy like Stephen Welsh who's been farmed out to the Belgian league, where he's done very well. We have Dane Murray, who has acquitted himself rather well during pre-season. And if we have a choice to develop some young central defender, I would rather we develop one of our own than develop for somebody else. And the Manchester City link just doesn't thrill me at all. It's a very disturbing indicator of where we are. And it makes me wonder why, if Mark Lowell is this highly rated person out in football, he does not have a job somewhere else in football. And maybe it's because he only left Celtic Park and his role at Celtic Park in name only. And I'm beginning to wonder if there's more to that story than meets the eye.
I would think Mark Lowell is working as a consultant for a prominent West of Scotland SPFL Premiership club. Nobody would touch him. I mean, look at that track record he left with.
But somebody at Celtic thought that hiring him was a good idea. And I'm fairly certain that the people who thought it was a good idea still think it was a good idea. And they have certain friends of the man who have been pushing the message over and over again for the last couple of years that Law was some kind of unrecognised genius, and it was only Rodgers' failure to develop his players that prevented them from becoming superstars. I mean, we all know the story about Kwon. And how after a couple of games at St Mirren, it was, oh, Celtic have made a mistake here and this guy could have been playing for us in the Champions League. I mean, it's preposterous. Absolutely idiotic on the surface of it. But as part of a blame Lowell for everything that goes wrong and blame the board for everything that goes right agenda, it certainly fits the pattern and it certainly fits the message. Now, I wouldn't be surprised if Mark Lowell was still doing some undisclosed work on Celtic's behalf and still drawing a salary. This looks an awful lot like it.
Eric, can you cut off the comments from Disco Dave? We don't need any CQN-type content. He can head over to CQN and share the genius there about how brilliant everything is with Manchester City and how lucky we are with the Lowell family. I don't really want to read any junk from Disco Dave.
Fair enough.
Your thoughts on the Man City links then, Eric?
Like James says, it's worrying. It's a worrying development that we only seem to have certain wells that we go back to all the time. We don't tend to have any other outlets. It's like we found the Japanese well through Ange Postecoglou, so we've gone back there. Prior to that, we had the Man City well, so we've gone back there. And it comes back to an awful lot in the club where we tend to take the same people over and over again in management roles. We tend to, you know, bring players back that have been at the club before. It's an awful lot of samey from the club. They just don't seem to have, like, there are, you have a scouting network. They should be looking at various, we should have a scout in each continent. We should have a scout in South America, North America. We should have, you know, looking at those markets. We should have a scout in Central and Eastern Europe, looking at those markets. But there just doesn't seem to be any joined up thinking when it comes to scouting. There doesn't seem to be any urge or want to work outside anything that the club has done previously. And let's be honest about it, if Ange Postecoglou hadn't opened up the market to Japan, we probably wouldn't be looking there anyway. But we've gone back to that well in the hopes that, you know, Inamura and what's the other guy's name? Shin Yamada. That Inamura and Yamada will be the same kind of level of players that Kyogo and, you know, others have been, of the Japanese contingent at Celtic. So, as with James, I'm concerned about this whole going back to Man City for loans. I mean, this is a complete blast from the past. This is something we did in the past. And while, yes, some of the players might be, we've had successful players from Man City, but Jesus Christ, surely, be to God, there's somewhere else we can look. Why is it Citigroup and connections to Citigroup and, I mean, all of that kind of stuff? If we actually had a functioning scouting network, as I said, and we had posted scouts all over the world, you know, and looking for players worldwide, that's a club of our size should have a worldwide scouting network. There should be, like, I often wonder what's stopping us from looking at the Brazilian market? What's stopping us from looking at good up-and-coming Brazilian players? I know, you know, the argument's going to be, oh, well, they don't want to come to the climate in Scotland. But, like, if they're going to Germany, they're going to a similar climate. If they're going to England, they're going to a similar climate. So what's stopping them from coming to Scotland? You know, bringing in a good up-and-coming Brazilian player or bringing in a good up-and-coming Argentinian player. I know we did try that with,
Bernabei,
yeah, a couple of seasons back, and that didn't really work out. But look, he's flourished since he left us. He's done okay over in Brazil. I don't know. All I'm saying is I just feel that there's so much more we could be doing. I don't think we're stretching our worldwide connections out far enough to look at other markets. We just seem to go back to the same wells over and over again.
So. The strange thing about this is there's some aspects of pre-season that have been pretty good. Negren has come in and settled. Austin Trusty has had two very good back-to-back games. They're only friendlies. I thought that was Disco Dave coming back. they're only friendlies, but he was up against good quality opponents and he looks good. So it can be done. There's a reason why we were saying it was horrendous management to bring in Trusty and Engels last season, missing out in pre-season training. But clearly, not much has been learned. But Tierney is looking good. His ball through for Hatate to create the goal for Yang against Ajax was fantastic. There's a nice bit of variation. Celtic do seem quite keen to put through a quick ball to take advantage of their pacey front players. I'm not sure how much space you'll get against St Mirren on Sunday. But Trusty looks good. Negren looks good. At left back, Inamura looks like a perfect deputy for Kieran Tierney, because we are not going to get a good quality signing coming in to play 20 minutes most weeks and get 15 games a season. So there are positives. The manager has got the players fit. The manager's got the players playing in a system. Negrin and Tierney have been come into the squad and settled very quickly. They're good to go. They're good to start on Sunday against St Mirren, and that just highlights why there should have been more. The wingers' position is utterly horrendous, which is probably a good description for Marco Tilio on Saturday night against Al Ahly. That was one of the most inept performances ever. It's a shame for the guy. Good luck. I hope he has a really good career elsewhere. But Matt Lowell and Celtic watched him for 3 years, and then they decided to spend the largest ever fee for someone coming out of the A-League. Good players in Australia leave Australia in their teens. They're scouted and they're brought over to Europe and elsewhere very early on. When you're 22, 23 and you're still playing in Australia, the chances are you've missed the boat. But if we can get something from Rapid Vienna for him, grab at it. Good luck to the guy. He could well do a decent job playing in Austria or Belgium or Denmark for some lower division club. Turns it on now and then, a few twists and turns, put in a cross, but never, ever, ever a Celtic player. He's behind Yang in the queue, and Yang, we've known over 2 years, is good for very, very occasional use. But James, we've mentioned the wingers quite a lot during this podcast. There's still no real movement there. What on earth is going on, and who are the two likely wingers against St Mirren on Sunday?
Well, I mean, I think always have talked about Yang and always have written about Yang and why Yang can't be allowed to leave right now. But I don't think any of us really believes that Yang should be anywhere near the Celtic squad for Champions League level football. He's nowhere near that level yet. And by the way, I do agree with the people who think that there is a potentially a very, very good player there, but it's only potentially right now. The longer he works with Rodgers, the better he'll get, but whether Rodgers will be around long enough to realise his full potential, none of us knows, although we can guess. But Yang's nowhere near it right now. And under normal circumstances, seeing him go off and play a year on loan somewhere else would be very welcome, and you would get a better player at the end of it. But right now, we can't afford to let him go, so he'll definitely be in the squad for the St Mirren game. Whether he starts is up in the air. I think he will start, because really, I don't think we're going to start Forrest, and Maeda's going to play on the left, so I think Yang will play on the right. And the fact that some of us are even conditioned at this moment in time to accept Yang shows you how bad it is, and shows you how far we've fallen from where we should be. The offers we made for this guy in Holland are a joke. It's as if we are deliberately trying to be as insulting as possible while still looking as if we're trying to get business done. And it's the usual plethora of people saying, so you're in favour of just paying whatever clubs want. Well, you know, sometimes what clubs want meets the market valuation of a player. And you only have to really ask yourself one question in terms of, is he worth it? Is he an adequate replacement for Nicholas Coon? And if the answer to that is yes, then he's worth what the club want for him. Simple as that. He is worth it. If he's an adequate replacement for Coon, he's worth every penny of that money. And therefore, we shouldn't be haggling over the transfer fee. If that is a reasonable sum of money to offer for a player in his age group and his background and his experience so far, I don't think it's an unreasonable sum to ask for. We're not going to, and it's not as if we're talking about trying to haggle it down for 6.5 million to 4 million. We offered a quarter of what their club thinks he's worth. A quarter. That's not a serious offer. That's not a serious attempt to get business done. That's an insult. That's offensive. And no wonder the media is tonight quoting one of their guys as calling it laughable, because it is laughable. There's no way that that's a serious bid. We're not attempting a serious bid here. And so I'm at a complete loss to know what it is we are attempting to do. We're certainly not trying to sign a player. And the only other thing, of course, is that if he's not as good a player as Nicholas Coon, why are we even bothering in the first place? Why are we wasting our time on a player who's not going to be an adequate replacement for the guy we've let go? I mean, it's just nonsense. The whole thing's nonsense. It's a joke. That nothing sums up the joke of this transfer window better than this unfolding fiasco or whatever it is.
I did an article this evening, sorry Joe, and I did basically a hypothetical conversation between Michael Nicholson and Mark Van Hintem, who's the technical director at Go Ahead Eagles. And in it I said, Mark Van Hintem responded to Michael Nicholson and he said, "You sold Nicholas Coon for 17 million. You held out for the valuation on your player. We operate on the same concept here. So go back to the drawing board, come back to us, and come back to us with a serious offer." And that has to be the kind of language that these guys are speaking to Celtic. And
the highest offer isn't even what we paid for Nicholas Coon in the first place.
Yeah, it's just absolutely.
Yeah, well, what I was going to say was James was wondering what we're playing at. I suspect I'm the most cynical person around when it comes to the Celtic board. I suspect they're trolling the manager. On Thursday night after the Ajax game, Brendan Rodgers questioned the ambitions of Celtic. It was the strongest comments that he's made so far. Strongest comments he's made in the second time as Celtic manager. And then, lo and behold, on Sunday night, in the Herald, we have Stephen McGowan revealing 3 failed bids for Jacob Broom. And then, not long afterwards, we find out that they've made an offer to take a Manchester City defender on loan. I reckon it's trolling the manager. They're just saying, "You're not getting what you're wanting. Get on with it." James, am I overly cynical in that, or is all of this tied up with the fact that Brendan Rodgers is in his last season, the 2 years he's had at the club, relations between him and the most important person at the club haven't improved, and we're heading for the inevitable through the course of this season?
No, I mean, I don't think you're being cynical at all. In fact, I think that for far too long a lot of years gave the board too much benefit of the doubt in terms of Rodgers. I think the general consensus at the end of last season was that they would get their sit down with Rodgers and they would have to convince Rodgers that they were serious about taking the next step. And if they could manage it, then Rodgers would stay. And I think we all thought that that conversation would take place in something like good faith and that they would at least make the effort. And I don't think they even care. And that's the truth of it. I think we completely misjudged the situation. We all spoke about how Rodgers is holding all the cards. Well, maybe Rodgers isn't holding any of the cards. Maybe these guys know that Rodgers has got to walk out with a year left of the deal to go, and they know they can treat him like shit, and they know that at the end of it, they'll not have to worry about Rodgers anymore, and they'll not have to worry about appeasing him or the fans. They can bring in their own yes man and run this club however they want, with them holding all the cards and controlling all the options, which is what they did want initially when they brought Rodgers in, because they had Mark Law in place to make all the signings, and that's what he was intended to do. Rodgers was there to be a head coach and to develop the players that they gave him, and when Rodgers made it clear that you can sign all this garbage as much as you want, but I don't have to play them, and I won't play them, I think some of them decided, well, it won't be long until you're no longer here and we can do this whatever way we like. And I think that's what we're going to see next season. I think we're heading for a situation next season where the board will have a yes-man manager, and they'll control the transfer and signing policy. And we better just hope that we get the right person. We better hope that we can literally get somebody who can turn their dog shit into diamonds. Because if not, we're in a bad, bad place. But they're gambling. So a lot of people are going to go along for the ride. A lot of people will have to go along for the ride. There's a lot of your fans will be quite pleased with that option.
Oh, yeah. There's plenty of fans that have picked up on the message that big, bad Brendan's to blame. He wasted all this money on Trusty, Engels and Ida, the three guys that were very important to last season's Champions League success, and we'd be better off just sticking with our £2 to £3 million signings and cross our fingers. But the £2 to £3 million signings, the ones that have came good, were brought in. Nicholas Coon was brought in by Brendan Rodgers, and Matt O'Reilly, Kyogo and others, that they were brought in by Ange Postecoglou. The guys that have been identified by the club signings, they've almost all fallen on their face. I mean, you're talking about the evaluation for Broom. 2 years ago, we thought that Mike Naroki was a £4.2 million defender from Legia Warsaw. That guy is not anywhere near it, but because he played 2 half-decent games last season, some folk are telling you he's the answer to our defensive problems, but there's a problem with Brendan Rodgers. Last season, Naroki lasted 20 minutes of the first pre-season game away to Ayr United. He played against Sligo Rovers and they got the runaround in an October friendly. The club that he joined in loan is a second division team in Germany. Naroki is a job's worth. He's a run-of-the-mill defender and he's not got the physique, he's not got the physicality, he's not going to be available for 90% of your matches. But Eric, can you offer anything other than the cynical view of me and James that the board has given up in trying to support Brendan Rodgers and they'll be happier when they're sitting this time next year with someone else in the manager's chair?
Can I clarify that? I don't think they've given up on Brendan Rodgers. I think the guys who never wanted Rodgers in the first place are going to have their day. They're going to get a day their way. That's why Mark Law was brought in. And don't forget, right, we're judging Mark Law not just on one summer transfer window. We're judging Mark Law on 18 months in the job. 18 months in the job. Not a single one of Mark Law's signings after he took over, after he joined the club, right? Not a single one of the signings that Ange made, save for one, Alistair Johnson, was any good at all. Was any kind of success. Not one.
Mark Lowell had three transfer windows, correct, and Alistair Johnson's only one from it. So over to you, Eric. Are we overly cynical, or is there a new manager, a more compliant manager getting lined up for next summer or earlier?
Well, I totally agree with the whole concept that you guys are talking about now. I just feel, I have a gut feeling that that's what they're aiming for. It definitely feels that way. However, I do feel that there is a sea change in the attitude of the fan base. And that's we can only judge stuff off what we see in Celtic cyberspace and what we see on X and so on and so forth, on the platforms where people can comment. And I've noticed a massive sea change in commenting on my social media when it comes to the club. I've noticed that more and more fans are getting more and more wound up by the whole situation at the moment. More and more fans are starting to get more and more irritated by the behaviour of the board. So all I can say is that if they continue, we just say we have a scenario this season where we fail to qualify for the Champions League, right? And that goes out the window. And I think we all feel that if we fail to qualify for the Champions League, that there will be another big sale will happen, and that's most likely going to be Dyson Maeda. Now, if you were to quantify that scenario with 7 years ago where Moussa Dembélé was sold after we failed to qualify for the Champions League, that was sort of accepted at that time. I wouldn't say it was welcomed with open arms. Clearly, it wasn't. However, I feel the mood of the fan base is a hell of a lot more volatile now than it was 7 years ago. So I feel if this scenario plays out and we don't qualify for the Champions League and then they go to look to sell Dyson Maeda, you're going to have all out white hot anger in the stands. People are just not going to take it anymore. Now, I know that we, the fan base, can't shift them out. We can't. But we can make their lives hard. We can organize protests. The Green Brigade, I am sure, will have no problem voicing their opinion on the board and putting up plenty of TIFOs to that effect. And I don't think the club, we shouldn't, the fan base doesn't need to depend on the Green Brigade. The whole fan base, as a whole, the people who are tired, sick and tired of this carry-on, need to actually have a collective voice and say, look, lads, enough is enough. We're a club in stasis at the moment. That's the best way to describe us. We're neither going forward nor backwards. But the only reason we're not going backwards is because of the manager that we have in place at the moment. And he will ensure that we do the best that we possibly can this season. I don't doubt that because of what I said last week and his legacy and the legacy that he wants to leave at Celtic. He'll work with the tools he's got and he'll get the best out of the tools he's got. But when he goes, we will no longer be in stasis. We will officially be going backwards. Now, unless, which a lot of the commenters have been saying there, that they just have Ange Postecoglou waiting in the wings, which would not shock me in the slightest. That just wouldn't shock me. If they just had a whole situation there or a scenario going on in the background where they said, yeah, Ange, you can come back. Brendan's going to see out his contract. Bide your time and we'll bring you back and then you can do what you want. As long as you just go to the Japanese and South Korean markets and bring us players in for 1.5 or 2 million, we'll be happy with that. You know, it wouldn't surprise me. I'm not saying that's going to happen. And to be quite honest, I think Ange Postecoglou left because he's a more ambitious man than the board is anyway. So, but again, it's not something that would surprise me, that it'd be something they'd try, put it that way. But at the moment, I am feeling there's a sea change amongst the fan base. I'm feeling that momentum is swinging more towards, you know, the fans are starting to wake up and realize. I honestly, in all of my time supporting Celtic, I honestly do not think I have seen such a barrage when it comes to merchandising and club merchandising and constant campaigns to get fans to buy stuff and constant, you know, advertising X everywhere. It's everywhere you look. And I've never seen such an intense campaign to get player or to get fans to spend money. Now, I wouldn't have a problem with that. I wouldn't have a problem with that campaign if they were, you know, constantly advertising, you know, merchandise and pushing merchandise and so on and so forth. If that was being reinvested in the football operation. But it's not. So it's all very much, I think what's, like, to get down to the crux of the matter, it's all take from the board. And there's nothing being given in return. And all of a sudden, the fan base is waking up and saying, nah, fuck this now. Seriously, it's got to stop. And I believe in the season ahead, if things do go pear-shaped, I have faith in Brendan that he will probably get us through the Champions League qualifier. I do. And I faith in him that he'll get us the best he possibly can out of the league. It's sad that I have to think that the catalyst for action will be, you know, that we get knocked out of the Champions League or we have a poor campaign in the league, that it will take that to stir people into action. It's sad that I feel that way, and that I would rather that fans just voice their opinions anyway, because it is getting ridiculous at this point in time. But look, if we go to Ibrox and we beat the Ibrox side on the 31st of August, it'll be all sunshine and light. Everybody will think that everything's hunky-dory again. And that will buy them some time, and they'll write off that, and nothing's going to change. We have to, as a fan base, we have to accept that under this board, we are never ever going to do anything different to the way we do at the moment. Nothing is going to change. If anything is going to change, it's going to get more mediocre. That's the only thing that's going to change. It is never going to move forward. It is never going to be joined up thinking. New ideas, new campaigns, you know, when it comes to you know, how we market the club, so on and so forth worldwide. Nothing's going to change under this board. So if the fan base wants this club to progress, then the fan base, as far as I'm concerned, needs to speak up. And I feel certain things will cause that to happen. Things that I don't want to happen, but at the same time, if I saw happen, would definitely be the catalyst to change. But however that pans out, we're only going to see August, as I said last week, is going to be a big month. And we're going to see what's going to happen. If we go to Pataudry and get a tough result there, and we go to Ibrox and we get a bad result there, and we get knocked out of Europe, this board is going to be under pressure. We're going to be under savage pressure from the fan base. But they don't cave to pressure from the fan base. They never have. That's the reality. So if we are starting to put them under pressure, then we need to keep the pressure on. That simple.
There's an old-fashioned concept that every penny, every pound raised is reinvested in the club. Clearly, that's not the case. Now, the target is to get the bank balance as high as possible and pay as much money to HMRC and corporation tax. Now, I saw somebody suggest that you were going too far, Eric. Right now, we've got a 50-50 chance of getting through the Champions League playoff, and with the current squad going into the Champions League, you'd be looking at 4 to 6 points from 8 matches. Last season, we get 12. And there's a couple of games we're saying, maybe we could have got more. Maybe we could have done more. So this notion that we're painting things all doom and gloom, a lot will depend on the Champions League draw. If we get Salzburg or Bale in the draw next week, I think that looks quite difficult for us. Both of those clubs will be very motivated. They'll be putting in the effort. They'll be strengthening our squad, and they'll be ready to go for it. There are some easier-looking ties that are possible. FCSB, the remake of Steaua Bucharest, that might be an easier-looking tie. But right now, it's 50-50. We'll see how the draw is next week. But going into the Champions League with the current squad, the Champions League could have a pretty adverse effect on things domestically if we're taking the current squad into Europe. So, James, what did you make of the two games at the Como Cup? They were a bit of an eye-opener. Again, there was three good halves and there was one very bad half, the second half against Ajax. So there's some signs of teamwork, there's some signs of new players fitting in, but equally, the squad is sadly lacking, and Ajax apparently finished up with their youth team playing against us. Our youth team were playing against Broxburn Athletic on Friday night. So what did you make of those two games over in Como, and did we learn much from them other than the managers getting a bit frustrated?
No, not at all. No, I thought we were defensively suspect, to say the least, against Ajax, which just increases the view that we all have that we need at least one quality centre-back. And by that, I don't mean a player whose entire experience is three first-team meaningless games by Manchester City and being PL2 player of the year or something like that. I don't know. 19-year-old guy with no experience at all. And by the way, for anybody who thinks that we're on a downer here on this deal because it's only a loan and that an option to buy would change anybody's mind, this is a 19-year-old kid. This is a guy who has played at Premier League reserve level in England in his three so-so-ish appearances for Man City. That's his experience. This is seriously being entertained as your option for improving our backline for Champions League football. That's a joke. It's got none of David a right to buy option. It's got none of David, and it really doesn't have anything to do with developing another club's player, although I'm pretty pissed off if that is what we're doing. This is just nowhere near the calibre that we're supposed to be trying to sign here. This is nowhere near the calibre that's going to improve this squad. He'll be lucky to see first team football at Celtic. If I were City, I wouldn't let him go on loan to Celtic because Rodgers just will not play a player who's not up to the task. It's that simple. Rodgers has proved it. Rodgers will not play players who've cost their club money when he doesn't think they're up to the task. He's not going to do it for some loanee to develop for some other side. So if I were Man City, I would run away from his deal as quickly as possible. Shinyamada, and he looked like he's got some, but that shouldn't be much a surprise to anybody who's looked at some of his YouTube clips and whatnot. And I know there's a lot of people who don't think you can learn anything for them, but you actually can. You're not going to see whether you're getting a really top-class player, but you can see what his attributes are, and you can see why the club might have went out and scouted him in the first place. You can see that he's got physical strength and that he can hold off a defender. You've seen that he can move fast. You've seen that he's pretty decent in the air, which for a guy his size is quite something. I remember another striker we used to have who was about the same size and was pretty good in there. So there are signs that we've got something there. And some of that was evident in the clips you watched him before it. So I'm pleased with that. So I was pleased with that signing for the start. I'm still pleased with it. Rodgers will have a plan for this guy and will know what he wants to do and where to put him in the team. Inamura has pleasantly surprised me. But again, this is not an option we should be looking at for the Champions League. It's a huge risk to take. And it appears that some people at the club are happy to take the risk, but I have my doubts about it. Big Austin Trusty's had an excellent pre-season, and I hope that means that a lot of people will give him a second chance. The manager certainly gave him a second look, and the manager will certainly not have any problems putting him straight into the team. There are a couple of youth players who've looked decent. As I said, I would rather have Dane Murray in and about the Celtic squad right now than have some Manchester City loanee. I think that would make a much more sensible option. And Rodgers likes him, and Rodgers wants to see what he can do with him. I think Rodgers would probably prefer that option than some gesture signing, as all this would be. But I want to read you guys something that appeared on a site this morning, right? I'm not entirely sure who the intended audience for this was, but for those of us who know better, it certainly was not us. Here are the two paragraphs I'm going to read you. When something doesn't make sense, assume you do not have all the details. Read practically anywhere online and you will learn it does not make sense for Celtic to sit in a pile of cash with a team that requires strengthening. We can agree on that. It doesn't make sense. So we could assume that we have full knowledge and that despite the obvious needs, Celtic would allow a player they, one, want as first choice for a position and two, are able to afford, but three, would risk losing the player for want of spending a tiny amount more of the bank balance. Again, we can agree this does not make sense. Or perhaps we don't have all the information. Why would anyone think that something which does not make any sense is reality? Well, I would suggest that that person, the writer of that, look at the world we're living in right now. Well, Donald Trump sits in the White House in the United States. That does not make any fucking sense at all, and yet it is our present reality. I had to stand in the fucking non-EU queue again, coming back from Tenerife, the most absurd queue in the entire world that has ever existed. And I have to stand in it every freaking time I go abroad because this country left the EU for reasons passing all understanding. It does not make any sense. But unfortunately, it is our reality. So much of what we see all around us does not make any sense and corresponds perfectly to the reality we're living in. And to claim that Celtic not spending money when they have money does not make sense is to kid only yourself, because it makes perfect sense, as we've been here before and before and before and before and before. There is nothing about this that does not make sense. This is reality. We see it very clearly. I'm sorry that the writer either does not or will not.
James, see that writer? Is he the guy that suggested that we should build a Champions League central midfield around Kwon and Holm, and also suggested that once Mark Lowell left Celtic, he'd get a job at Manchester City or Spurs? Is that the guy?
I believe
that
so.
Him? Aye. Thought it was him. So there is one other big issue from Italy over the weekend. James was on top of it very quickly. A former SPL chairman felt quite uncomfortable in the company of Celtic supporters. He's a sort of Pat Nevin type. He likes to be hip and trendy, and he likes to have media buddies. And I think most of his content is all aimed at being right on with his media friends. So, James, can you give us a bit more detail on what got you, not upset, but fired up and enthused about the way that former... SPL chief executive, he was the guy that signed off and agreed with the contracts given to Ronald de Boer and Tory Andre Flo when they were coming to Rangers. That was a club that died in 2012 for Disco Dave and the rest of them. Those players came to Rangers for contracts lesser than they were getting at Chelsea and Barcelona. Why on earth would they do that? But that former SPL chief executive, he rubbed his hands and ran off to BBC, Sky and others to get old firm contracts on the back of that. So, James, what spiked you into action when you read that nonsense from that pompous, middle-of-the-road, middle-class Celtic fan disowning the rest of the Celtic fan base?
It's not the first time he's done it. I mean, it's not the first time he's done it recently. I think he said last year that he felt himself moving away from Celtic, or that Celtic was moving away from him. I can't even remember which it was. A lot of us, by the way, back in the day said that about the Labour Party. We didn't leave the Labour Party. The Labour Party left us. Well, I don't see how Celtic left this guy. Celtic should appeal to this guy right down to the ground. It has a board of directors that operates exactly in the manner that he would operate if he was CEO here, which I know is a job he hankered after for a while. Although, thankfully, your board wasn't even stupid enough to do that. Although, never say never. But he was the guy who, last year, was talking about how the Green Brigade were drifting towards being a kind of Scottish version of the Italian ultras, that they would move into organised crime and that they would terrorise the whole club. I mean, he lives in a fantasy land, this guy. He lives in an absolute fantasy land. And it's not just the comments that he made about Celtic fans in Como, which apparently is where he now lives. I didn't know that. Certainly doesn't surprise me. But it wasn't even so much that. He also made some weird comment about, I haven't watched the team properly for a long time. No shit, Sherlock. I would have put money on that. But Dyson Marie doesn't know a very good football player. Was one of his other crazy online suggestions. I think, like a lot of other people who were once sort of C-list Scottish football celebrities, he just likes to get his name in the papers every now and again. And he knows that Slag and Celtic and Slag and Celtic fans, as a alleged Celtic fan himself, who apparently hasn't watched the team in a long time and thinks Dyson Maeda is a substandard footballer, I think he knows that the quickest way to get your name in the newspapers is just to attack Celtic, especially if you are a Celtic fan. It's been working for people like Charlie Nicholas for years and years. It's one of the most well-worn paths in Scottish media. It's the only thing that's guaranteed to get you in the newspapers, Mayor, is if you once played at Ibrox and want to offer your opinion or something.
As a nice comment there, somebody suggested that Roger Mitchell, might as well name him, Roger Mitchell has had a go at us, so I'll look forward to picking up on that. Thanks for the content, Roger. You'll give you another good slap. And I'm sure Yogi Junior will be on it as well. Yogi Junior certainly didn't miss out on him. So, Eric, I feel you've been missing out. Eric, you've been left out of this little dialogue, Scottish yeah. without keys. What's your take on that pompous brat based in Como, having a pop at Celtic supporters, slagging off Dyson Maeda, who I suspect that Roger never saw much of Celtic in the Champions League last season, scoring goals against some pretty decent teams, including Bayern Munich and RB Leipzig. So what was your take on the nonsense from Como over the weekend?
Well, he's clearly full of shit. That was my take on it. You know, so I can't really put it any, what would you say, more subtly than that. Yeah, he hasn't got a clue what he's talking about, to be fair. He's not a Celtic fan. He's certainly no supporter of our club. And to come out with comments like that, that's just crass and completely disconnected. No idea what he's talking about. And like I said, full of shit. And I leave it at that because there's nothing else needs to be really said. You know? What I would like to talk about, though, and the fans have made a good they've made a good point there, as in the commenters, is somebody said earlier on that they feel it's fated that we will be drawn against Maccabi Tel Aviv. Now imagine that.
Yeah, there's a horrible inevitability about that. No?
Not quite. Maccabi drew one each last week in Cyprus against the Cypriot champions, and the return leg's getting played in Serbia. So they're not allowed to play in their home ground. It was one each in the first leg. So fingers crossed the Cypriot champions can come through. If they win that, they will then play against Dynamo Kiev or Hamrun Spartans. We'd imagine Dynamo Kiev would win that. Dynamo Kiev, as we saw last season, are utter mince. They get a very lucky draw in the third qualifying round, and then they went on and get beat home and away by Salzburg. And then in the Europa League, they lost their first six matches and then salvaged some consolation late on. So I still think it's long odds against Celtic getting drawn against Maccabi Tel Aviv. Hopefully the Cypriot champions will put them out this week. But it's a draw that I'm sure the media types will be rubbing their hands at. I'm sure there's people at Celtic and UEFA will be utterly terrified of that match. The return leg would be played somewhere neutral, probably yeah. behind closed doors. So that's one small element taken away, but it's not a prospect that anyone should be looking forward to. So we've got about 5-6 minutes left, James, for our hour. We missed you at the start of the show. Give us an update of where the Celtic blog will be going in the coming days.
Well, there was an interesting thing we were talking about. Maccabi Tel Aviv, there was an interesting thing raised on the Spears podcast the other day. And it was a sort of open-ended debate question, more than anything else. And it was about whether or not our club or the club across the city would ever sign or would ever want to sign an Israeli player again. And I am going to tackle that because it's a complicated question. And as you can probably imagine, The conversation did not do it the full complexity of it anywhere near the justice it deserves. But it's a complicated question, and I want to tackle it, try and tackle it properly. Also, I was on the Celtic tour yesterday. I'm ashamed to say I've never done the Celtic tour before until yesterday. And the tour guide, guy called Paul, kudos to you, mate, you were excellent. We were in the main stand, and he was showing us where all the celebs and whatnot sit, and we started to talk about Fergus and how it's time that Fergus had a permanent memorial at Celtic, and that we should do that for Fergus while he's still here to get honoured instead of waiting until he no longer is and then doing something for him then. And I completely agreed, and I told him I'm going to write about it. Fergus deserves that, and Fergus deserves to be able to come to the unveiling of his own stand or whatever it is. And it should be the North Stand. And that should be what we're aiming for. And I want to write about that. And I'm going to give your board a wee bit of benefit of the doubt. And right, because in some ways I feel like these guys are, they're walking in the footsteps of a genuine giant and a genuine icon. And they've never done anything like what he did. They can't do anything like what he did. They were on a loser before they even took their jobs. Because how do you beat that? How do you beat rebuilding the football club, building the stadium, building the training ground, laying the foundations for modern Celtic, and giving it its corporate identity and giving it back some of its cultural identity? I don't know how you beat that. I really genuinely don't know how they did it. And they've been living in the shadow of it ever since. And so I'm going to give them a bit of benefit of the doubt, because there really wasn't any way for them to top it. I know that they haven't done anything significant at Celtic on the level of any of his achievements. They haven't left a lasting legacy behind them in terms of what they've done in terms of infrastructure or off-the-field stuff. I know we've got some investment in Barrafield and whatnot, now, long overdue, but really, Fergus is modern Celtic. And his shadow looms over all of them and this whole club to this day, and I think it's about time that he got some kind of permanent recognition for it. I've said before that directors don't get statues in the car park, but saviours do, and saviours should. And that's why Fergus should have his.
Deep stuff there, James. I think most folk will be in agreement with that. There'll be a few, not 100% behind it, but he's the biggest modern figure in Celtic's history. And if we didn't have, I remember reading someone saying, if the current board were in place, if they'd been involved in the takeover, we'd have built a 40,000 seater stadium, and who knows what else might have went along with it. But I'd like to say a lot of good comments today. I'm not in charge of the comments. Eric highlights the comment, and I think we've got this system where for the happy clappers, we'll allow them one comment and then we'll stop highlighting their comments so they can go back to their favoured websites. So there's lots of good comments, lots of good content coming in. People are asking, what can we do? We can't really do anything. A fan advisory board would be a box-ticking exercise. Along, tea and biscuits, pat them on the back and say, thanks for your input. We'll go and consider it. The only thing that matters is cash. I realise that folk there's a few folk on my website put comments in about why they've given up season tickets in recent times, but folk are reluctant to give up season tickets. But you can reduce your Adidas addiction. You don't need to buy 3 strips. You don't need to buy every piece of merch that comes out. Maybe buy 2 of the 3 strips, or even just buy 1 of the 3 strips. And when they come up with a St. Patrick's Day kit that they're never going to use in March, just let it pass you by. There's nothing, you're not compelled to do anything beyond buying your season ticket. If you go to the game on Sunday, do you really want to pay £3 for a Coke that's been poured out of a plastic bottle or some dubious savoury treat that's just been heated up in a microwave? So there's things like that, but over the piece, nothing is going to happen. If the results go badly, I hope they don't. I hope they go to Ibrox and give that mob a hell of a beating. I hope Russell Martin gets scalped black and blue when we go there at the end of August. But unless results go in the wrong direction, nothing's really going to change. You can make your own protests. You can spend less money. You don't need to buy the Paradise Windfall, various other things. Our three websites are all platforms for anyone that isn't a happy clapper. I forgot all the YouTube, I forgot all the podcast things for tonight, but if you like our content, if you've stuck with it, please subscribe. And when you subscribe, click on the bell and that'll give you notifications when we're on. We should be on from 6:30 every Monday, shouldn't we, James?
Yes,
James will be hosting next week.
I've been having my holiday on for 3 whole weeks now.
Yeah. Going forward, we'll be on at 6:30. Good comments on during the podcast, apart from a few happy clappers, Disco Dave and Frank Brennan. But if the non-happy clappers can return to the podcast on YouTube and add some comments, that'd be appreciated. So give it a thumbs up, give it a like, share it, all those sort of things. They're all appreciated. It gives us a higher profile than some other Celtic podcast. On that one, I want to give a few shout-outs. The E-Tims podcast was back at the weekend. E-Tims is, for me, a great listen. It's a sad loss when we're not getting the daily diary from them, but those guys are genuine long-term Celtic supporters with a modern outlook. They support the club, and they can see through all the nonsense that's going on. Another one, on Axon this afternoon, Kevin Graham was on the button. He was putting forward a lot of good ideas. He's a cynic like myself. He can see through things. He can join the dots when people are trying to push agendas at you. Basically, when someone's telling you something, the first thing you say is, why are they telling me this? Why do they want me to go with this? It's very simple. It's very basic. So, yeah. I'll finish up with passing the baton over to James for a finale. James will be hosting next week.
Can I just make a point as well, Joe, before we finish
up? Yep.
Just briefly, I know I just want to kind of extend there what people were saying about a fan advisory board and all that kind of stuff. What I will say is, with regard to the three of us, you will be guaranteed that we will keep the campaign up to highlight the bullshit that's going on at our club. You'll be guaranteed that we will not hide or shirk away from our duty to tell it like it is at Celtic Football Club. And at the moment, we all know that things could be a hell of a lot better. We all know that things are not going the way that they should be going. So that's all I want to say, is that while we can't influence the way that fans behave as bloggers, we can communicate to the fans that follow our blogs as best we can to get the information across to them. And as I said, time out of number, we base our information on the patterns and the machinations of Celtic Football Club, the things that we see happening over and over and over again, as Joe said. And that's why we understand the direction that thing, you know, the direction and the way things go. And that's why sometimes, like, I was accused of catastrophizing tonight, or whatever you want to call it. It's a mouthful, but catastrophizing. I'm just playing out the scenarios, and the scenarios that I see in my head happening, the possible scenarios, and these are scenarios that have happened before. So while James said we live in a world where, you know, anything can happen, just be aware that anything can happen at Celtic Football Club at the moment, but we will be there and we will be on hand every day to call it out and point it out.
Yep, three independent voices, three independent keyboards that call it as it is, based on experience, based on what we've seen previously, not on what we're getting whispered or what's getting pushed our direction to try and promote that. I'm giving the last word to James. You're hosting next week, James. Sign off with some words of wisdom.
Don't ever think, guys, that because you want to support the club and pay your money for season tickets and buy jerseys and whatever, that there's nothing you can do. Don't ever believe that, right? You have to think about the people that you're dealing with for a start. These are guys who've been sitting in the soft seats for so long that they've forgotten what a plastic seat feels like, if they ever knew in the first place. These guys have been riding a wave of, we can do no wrong, we're the best in the business, we're the smartest kids in the class, for so long that being told that they are wrong doesn't sit well with them, to say the least. Right? And that's why certain blogs have been threatened with legal action, and certain bloggers at AGMs have been told to sit down and shut up. Don't think for a minute that these people are immovable. if you make your voice heard and you make your displeasure known, and if enough of us make our voices heard and make our displeasure known, we will change the way this club is run. Because I think these people are so used to the easy life and the soft seats and the riding the wave of all the good times and everything else that they don't know how to handle serious, sustained criticism and serious, sustained pressure. And if we put them under enough of it, we won't need to starve this club of money or anything else. These people will take their show on the road. They will give up their soft seats for their easy life. And I genuinely believe that.
That's a positive, upbeat note to finish. Another positive, upbeat note. Cross our fingers for Panathinaikos on Wednesday. They let us down badly last week. They played them off the park. But unfortunately, Panathinaikos don't know how to put the ball in the back of the net. So hopefully over the last 8 days, or the 8 days between the two matches, they learn how to do that and they can burst that bubble at Ibrox. Put a prick in it, lads. So good luck to Panathinaikos. We'll be back again next week with James hosting. Thanks for all the comments, and keep in touch with our pod with our websites every day. And then we've got the live podcast on a Monday at 6:30. Hail, hail.
Hail, hail, guys. See you next
hail,
week. Hail.
Ugh.